This is a republic if you can keep it. An inside look at Michigan and national politics with Jeff Timmer and Mark Brewer.
I'm Mark Brewer. Welcome to the Three Strikes and You're Out edition of A Republic If You Can Keep It. Jim Jordan keeps going downhill in his quest to win the worst job in government. He's now lost three public votes to be Speaker of the House, and we understand is now out of the Speaker's race altogether. And a free-for-all has now started up inside the Republican caucus over Speaker. We'll do a deep dive on that, plus the political implications in Michigan of that chaos in the Republican caucus. We'll also take a look at campaign finance reports, which reveal two fundraising dynamos in Michigan, Congressman John James and Congresswoman, but Senate candidate, Alyssa Slotkin.
I'm going to explain that I have COVID, and that's why I sound like this. I feel like I've been hit by a truck, and I'm here to tell you, in the words of the famous philosopher Yogi Berra, it's not over till it's over. If you haven't been boosted yet, go get your boosters. I waited too long. I regret it. News that's happening this week, Trump lawyers Sidney Powell and Kenneth Cheeseborough have flipped in the Georgia RICO case, which is tremendously bad news for defendant Donald Trump, Mark Meadows, Rudy Giuliani, and others. First-term Democrat Congressman Sri Tanadar is a target for Detroit Democrats in the 2024 primary, and a surprise that's not really a surprise revealed another major Republican donor is backing ultra-left-wing presidential candidate Cornel West. Let's begin with the GOP's self-inflicted disaster that is really the circle jerk happening in the House of Representatives, Mark. The contrast between Joe Biden's steady hand, a statesmanlike handling of the crisis in the Middle East, and the total ineptness of the House Republicans has to be some of the, to me, best political television out there, optics, when it comes to the benefit the Democrats right now. You couldn't have, I think, a more clear picture of where the two parties stand.
Yeah, Jeff, and the Republicans in the U.S. House can't even govern themselves, let alone the country. As we now know, Jordan lost three public votes. He then lost an internal caucus vote, so he's now completely out. And apparently there's now a free-for-all for Speaker inside that caucus. He will have been given, I guess, over the weekend, as we hear it, understand it, to declare their candidacy. We've got the Louisiana congressman who lives in Michigan, Jack Bergman, declaring that he wants to be Speaker, along with the characters as well. So it's devolving, and it's a worst possible time, right? Crises overseas that need to be dealt with, and as you indicated, the president, thank God, with a very steady hand in terms of dealing with these, not just obviously Ukraine, but also the Middle East situation now. And it may spread elsewhere, but we need a functional House. We need to provide aid, as the president, I think, very capably last night laid out the case. We need to provide assistance to Israel. We need to provide assistance to Ukraine. There's a lot of other pressing needs. And of course, there's a budget that has to be passed soon. And instead, all this time is being consumed with this infighting. The Republicans in that caucus seem to spend more time tweeting and running to the cameras, bashing each other publicly and privately than they do trying to reach consensus. It appears, by the way, that the Democrats have at least Leader Jeffries, and I think there's probably some private outreach going on, expect a willingness to talk about some kind of bipartisan compromise so that a Speaker can be elected. But so far, those have been rebuffed. It looked like there was a tentative effort, Jeff, to make the temporary Speaker, Congressman McHenry, give him some additional powers. Frankly, if I was him, I'd say no thank you, because that's a prescription for him staying put as opposed to being replaced. That plan fell apart. We're at the situation where apparently all he can do is supervise fruitless election efforts for a Speaker. This is not only a national embarrassment, but an international embarrassment, Jeff, for our country. We're supposed to be one of the leading democracies in the world. I think we still are. But every day this goes on, that reputation gets worse and worse. And I frankly fear that many of our foreign enemies are going to take advantage of this chaos to the detriment not only of us here in the United States, but of democracy around the world.
Anybody who's listened to more than one episode of this podcast knows that I think this is this whole episode has revealed exactly who the Republican Party today is. They are not a serious political party. They're not a viable, functioning political party. This is who they are. This is what, and moreover, this is what their voters voted for. They voted for chaos. They voted for agents of destruction. They voted for agents of grievance. There's three things that people say could happen here, right? Okay, the Republicans come together and find somebody to get to 217 votes within their caucus. Another option, they empower temporary Speaker Pro Tem, Speaker Light, without all the powers of the office, Patrick McHenry, or that somehow Democratic leader Hakeem Jeffries gets five Republicans to side with him and become Speaker. I don't think there's any chance for any of those three scenarios to ever actually happen. I don't think there's any Republican who's going to come up with 217 votes. I just don't think it's possible given how divided they are and how much they hate each other. They hate each other as much as they hate Democrats or anybody else. And it really is emotional on their parts now. The emotion has gotten in the way of this. You said if you were Patrick McHenry, you wouldn't want the job. There's no way anybody who has an IQ above zero would go into that job unless they had the full and total powers of the job. Otherwise, they're just asking to become a pinata. No sane person would let themselves be put in that role to become the speaker without actually being the speaker. And you could argue that being the speaker, it isn't worth it anyway in and of itself, let alone that being the speaker without any power. And with regard to Jeffries, in a sane and rational world where logic and rationality applied, people might say, okay, you could find five Republicans who care about the country more than just the party, and they're willing to give their votes to Jeffries and come up with some kind of compromise where those five people would have immense power. They represent what it takes for Jeffries and the Democrats to pass anything. It's not going to become this blank check for the Democratic Party at that point. And you might think, wow, that makes a lot of sense. It makes way too much sense to ever happen in this political climate. There isn't one person in that caucus, in the Republican caucus, who would have the political stones to do that, let alone five. It's just not, I just don't see how that could ever happen. And so you say, okay, if none of these things can happen, then what is going to happen? And at this point, I don't know. I just don't know if they're going to have to come up with some kind of shared rotating power agreement, if it's going to have to be somebody from outside. I don't think Hakeem Jeffries can become the speaker. I think maybe a consensus of all the Democrats and five Republicans making somebody like Fred Upton the speaker could happen. Now, something like that, it might have sounded crazy and far-fetched back in January when it was first rumored. It might seem crazy now, but maybe I think that would be more palatable to those five Republican votes that they would need to get all the Democrats behind it. But then I don't know that the Democrat math works. The Democratic math works to keep all 212 of their members together to make that happen. So it seems like this could just continue on and on, and we might have what amounts to where Patrick McHenry becomes the kind of the human continuing resolution. The same way we've passed budgets for the last decade might be the way that we empower somebody to lead the House of Representatives so they can at least go through with the process of business when it comes to appropriating funds to deal with these international crises and domestic needs, to pass the funding that is going to run out here in 27 days, the temporary continuing resolution. So they will find, my guess is, the most inartful, most politically chaotic way to proceed forward. If looking back at all the evidence points, was that nothing good is going to come out of this, and what likely comes out of it is going to be even worse than we've seen so far.
In other democracies, parliamentary democracies, if the parties can't form a governing coalition, you call another election. That's not an option here. We are stuck, these Republican clowns, in that caucus for the balance of this term. But let's talk about, and I agree with you, I don't know what's going to happen. I don't have a crystal ball scenario. I do agree Hakeem Jeffries should not become speaker. I think that's asking for trouble. If there is an outsider or something, they can make a deal. But what implications does this have on the elections next year. It seems to me, and you and I both been involved in this for a long time, the leader of these caucuses are the leaders of the reelection efforts, right? They give direction to the vast staff and the fundraising apparatus, the recruiting apparatus that is looking forward to 2024, recruiting candidates, raising money, and so forth. The shift is drifting at best for the Republicans. I'm sure there's still staffers trying to get some work done, but how do you recruit a candidate when a candidate sees this? Why would a donor want to invest in this caucus, given the chaos that they see? So I don't see any upside, Jeff, and I see a lot of downside for the Republicans in terms of that aspect of their operation, plus just the political impact. Right now, in weeks and weeks, the Republicans can't run the House. They have a majority. They can't function. They can't govern. That's got to be bad for the public image of the party. And it gives something to Democrats to run on next year. But again, you've been inside politics as long or longer than I have. Probably not as long. I'll give you that. You're a little younger. What's your take? What impact is this having on the election apparatus going into 24?
There are two things that are going to determine which party wins control of the House next November and takes charge in January of 2025. And that's money and everything else. And both of those things are going in favor of the Democrats right now. Kevin McCarthy, for all of his faults and weaknesses, and he had an enormous amount of faults and weaknesses. The weakest, most inept speaker when it came to the wielding the power of the position in history, but he was a prolific fundraiser. The Republicans have really shot themselves in the foot, maybe more serious, hit an artery in doing so, when it came to cutting off their nose to spite their face by removing McCarthy from the fundraising position. I think this kind of the stalemate that has now calcified within the Republican caucus is going to have a devastating, chilling effect on their fundraising going forward. There was already a prevailing notion that Jeffries and the Democrats we're most likely to get majority next November. The institutional money, though, inside Washington, K Street, and PAC money was betting on Jeffries. They don't want to give against the Republicans, you know, in huge numbers. But I think that the fear of Republican retribution and Republican victory is going to diminish with each passing day over the next year as we head up to the election next November. And so I think that this only helps Democratic fundraising, and it cripples the overall Republican fundraising, the big super PAC, leadership PAC fundraising. And then this galvanizes the coalition of the same, the people who are, they voted for Joe Biden because they were tired of the constant torrent of insanity that came from Donald Trump. They voted for, mostly for Democrats, very narrowly in the House in 2022, but people were voting for stability, for predictability. The Republicans are doing everything possible to say, don't give us sharp objects. We will damage ourselves and you and everything else with them. All the indicators are that this election in 2024 is shaping up to be what could be a landslide Democratic election in the House of Representatives. Perhaps a totally different dynamic in the U.S. Senate, but in terms of who controls the House, Hakeem Jeffries isn't likely to be speaker between now and January of 2025, but January 2025, he looks almost certain to become speaker.
It's very interesting because maybe it's Mitch McConnell who's the beneficiary of all this, Jeff. He says to all those donors, everybody else, send your money here. We'll put it to use. Forget those clowns in the House, Republican clowns in the House. Send me your money.
Mark and Jeff offer their take on the bombshell Trump trial news out of Georgia. After these messages on A Republic, if you can keep it.
Epic MRA is pleased to sponsor this podcast. Epic MRA is a Lansing-based market research and public opinion polling firm with nearly four decades of experience measuring public opinion about politics, ballot proposals, and public policy issues.
Our clients include media outlets, school districts, colleges and universities, all levels of state and local government, and membership organizations. For the November 2022 election, Epic MRA published the most accurate final pre-election poll among several state and national polling firms.
Our polls most closely predicted the actual election results in races for governor, secretary of state, and attorney general, as well as the three ballot proposals.
Epic MRA is clearly the go-to polling firm in Michigan. Visit www.epicmra.com to learn more.
Ben Franklin may have invented the Franklin stove to stay warm, but we go Ben one better.
We have the Ben Franklin hoodie, dedicated to Americans for sanity.
But wait, there's more. Our merch store has coffee mugs for Democrats, uncrazy Republicans, and free-thinking independents, as well as t-shirts for the discerning democracy lover. Just click on the Merch Center link on our homepage, arepublicpodcast.com. Show your support for political sanity at the podcast merch store. It's your duty as an American.
I really want to talk about Georgia. I'm sorry. Maybe it's the lawyer in me, but I think everybody, not just the lawyers, understand the earthquake that happened this week, that on the eve of her trial, Sidney Powell pled guilty to some relatively minor charges in the scheme of things, but agreed to testify in the RICO case. And then Kenneth Chesbrough followed suit. She's the lead Kraken lawyer around the country, architect of all this stuff. Inside all these meetings, all these phone calls, she has all this inside information, as does Chesbrough. This is just devastating for the rest of the defendants in that case, starting with Trump.
Yeah, this is why prosecutors use RICO. It's very effective at getting people who are part of conspiracy turn on others who are involved in the conspiracy. And what was notable about Chesbrough's appearance in court today when he pled guilty was in open court, he said that he conspired with Donald Trump and others. Donald Trump's name was mentioned by a guy pleading guilty, that I conspired with Donald Trump and others to commit these crimes that I'm pleading guilty to. It spells doom, I think, for Trump, for Giuliani, for Meadows. I don't know that any of this, that the legal jeopardy that Trump finds himself in, is going to play out in enough fashion to certainly I don't think it is going to derail him from winning the Republican nomination. Now, having trials that are going on during the presidential election year is certainly going to have an impact on the conduct of the campaign and how voters view him. And I think that it's not going to be positive. It's going to embolden and empower and entrench his support, those people who will crawl across broken glass to vote for Donald Trump. But there are fewer of them than there are pro-democracy Americans, pro-Joe Biden Americans. The more this goes on, the louder it gets. The cameras in the courtroom in Georgia, for instance, that will happen if these cases start to come to trial, are going to galvanize the majority coalition in this country who do not want Donald Trump president. And then the majority coalitions in the key states that will matter in choosing whether or not Donald Trump will be president again. I think that all of this points to what should be a very good outcome for the country, for American democracy, and for the rule of law and free and fair elections to continue past 2024. However, I don't say that with any degree of confidence yet, because I do believe if the election were held today, that it would be too close to call. No, it's not going to be held today. We have a year and 2 or 3 weeks here, or whatever the calendar says, for this to play out. But I think that Donald Trump's only opponent for the nomination continues to be his own aorta. As long as that holds intact, he will be the Republican nominee. We had some big major news in the presidential race on the Republican side today, with Michigan's favorite son, Perry Johnson, dropping out after lighting more than $14 million from his own pocket on fire. Shows he has a lot more money than sense. But I think that this is, in terms of the criminal case and cases, this is a tremendously huge seismic development that people who sat in these conspiratorial meetings making these plans are turning against the other criminal defendants in these cases. It's been a long time since anybody's seen or heard from Mark Meadows. Is he cooperating? What kind of proffers are on the table when it comes to Mark Meadows? Rudy Giuliani is dead broke and needs to cut a deal to save the rest of his life. He is old. in bad shape and does not want to spend a moment in prison. The pressure is growing on everyone else who is involved in this conspiracy, all the other people who are indicted to turn against Donald Trump, where all of them will have their testimonial fire aimed at Donald Trump, all of their phone records, all of their contemporaneous notes, everything that's out there. This is the kind of thing that will eventually put Donald Trump behind bars, so long as he doesn't get preferential treatment from the judicial system.
Jeff, I agree with all of that. I think if our listeners will recall, I think we agree that the January 6th committee did a great job laying out the evidence it was able to uncover. But obviously, it didn't get anything out of the Sidney Powells and the Kenneth Chesbros and others of the world. So this is going to be vastly more revealing than even what the January 6th committee was able to effectively put out there. And I think that had an impact. I think their hearings were well managed, had an impact. I think their report had an impact. But now we're going to have testimony live from the courtroom from the very much insiders inside this conspiracy day after day, talking about what they did in cooperation at the direction working with Donald Trump. So that's going to be, I think, good for democracy, as you indicated, to get that out there. I also think it could be and will be used very effectively in the campaigns, highly targeted. You're right, Jeff. There are very few voters who can be moved these days. We're so polarized, but there still are those voters. And as you point out repeatedly and very accurately, just a shift of a few tens of thousands of votes in 2020 and Trump would now be president. The same thing can happen next year. And so all of this information is critically important to get out and make sure those voters see it and hear it and work to persuade them that we cannot go back and elect Donald Trump again. So this will be another part of that. I'm sure he's going to come up with some crazy conspiracy theories. You're right. All this is going to do is reinforce the allegiance of his people to him, but we're not talking about them. We've got to motivate the other folks who are interested in protecting democracy and make sure they vote again like they did in 2020. But again, I just think this is an earthquake, and you've correctly pointed out it puts enormous pressure on others. The ship is leaving. And if Giuliani and Meadows and others want to get on it, they got to get on it quick, or they're going to be left stranded with Donald Trump.
Let's turn back to some of the federal campaigns here in Michigan, where third quarter fundraising numbers are now out. And there were some interesting nuggets to be gleaned out of that you teased in the open to the podcast episode here. So why don't you tell us a little bit about what those numbers reveal, and we can talk about the political implications.
Yeah, Alyssa Slotkin continues to be the fundraising juggernaut that she proved herself to be in her run for Congress. She's now up to nearly $9 million raised for the Senate campaign, $3 million in just the last quarter, and she's got well over $5 million cash on hand. It takes money to make money, so she is spending her money raising money, and she's far outdistancing anybody else there. Hill Harper has raised a few hundred thousand dollars, but is not anywhere near competitive with her in terms of the primary. And frankly, to my surprise, the leading incumbent member of Congress in terms of fundraising is Congressman John James, who apparently raised about $1 million last quarter. He's over $2 million cash on hand, but he's going to need that. This is the race that the DCCC and others blew big time back in 2022 when he won by barely, I think it was less than 1,600 votes. He's going to need every nickel this time to defend himself. And he's going to get tagged, Jeff, as you and I know, with all of this chaos in Washington. Apparently, at one point this week, he apparently cast a vote for Candace Miller, a former member of Congress. He cast a vote for her for speaker. But there's no way he's going to avoid getting tagged with all this chaos, all the extreme proposals we see coming out of his colleagues in the Republican caucus. But again, to me at least, very surprising to see those fundraising numbers out of John James.
James, in his previous failed runs for office, his two failed Senate campaigns in 2018 and 2020, was a very prolific fundraiser. He not only has deep pockets that he's tapped into, but he has a wide network. And the fact that his race was so much closer in 2022 than people nationally, the national funders who invest in congressional races, thought it would be, they've turned on the fundraising spigots on the national Republican side to fill John James' reelection coffers with money. So it's not surprising to me to see that kind of institutional national money is flowing into John James. But I think he's going to need every dime and perhaps more, because he has, people could argue that he's playing it smart. He didn't go on record voting for Jim Jordan. He voted for somebody different, including Candace Miller one time, in each of the three failed votes for Jordan this week. But I don't think that's going to matter, because John James is part of this insane Republican conference that it can't govern. And what we talked about just a little bit ago, the appearance that these people are unfit for serious grown-up roles, that they're not serious people representing a serious party. John James can't pretend to be as part of some other Republican party. It just doesn't exist. And so I think ultimately he's going to be tainted by the Jim Jordans and the Matt Gaetz and the Marjorie Taylor Greens just as much as anybody else. Whether he supports them openly or not doesn't matter. The fact that he raised a lot of money, he's going to need to continue to raise a lot of money, but it's going to be hard. And it's going to be hard because now, in voting against Jim Jordan, he's now provoked the ire of these very MAGA Republicans in his district who say, hey, you got elected because of us, and now you've betrayed us. And so he's created a problem for himself, maybe not with fundraising, but when it comes to support and in opening up a rear guard element in his own party, in his own district. So he's damned if he does, damned if he doesn't. And I'd say it couldn't happen to a nicer guy.
Jeff, thanks for that cogent analysis of John James and the dilemma he's now put himself in. I want to get your take on the latest entrant on the Republican side for the U.S. Senate, Mike Rogers. What do you make of his fundraising?
I questioned when Mike Rogers decided to publicly announce his entrance into the race before the close of third quarter books, knowing that he would have to go public with whatever he had raised by October 15th, like he did. That to me signaled that they had lined up the money behind that announcement to really make people say, wow, to really blow the doors off. Otherwise, why not wait 3 weeks, wait till October 1st, announce your campaign, and then give yourself the full 3 months to raise money before the reporting period. And so to me, that wow number has seven figures. It was at least $1 million, or why do it? And he fell short of that. He raised an impressive amount of money. Okay. $800,000 is not chump change, but it's not near enough to really be impactful, even in the Republican primary against James Craig, presuming Craig can make the ballot. It's not enough to erase the lead that Craig starts this race with. And Rogers underwhelmed in terms of where they set the bar when it came to what people were expecting to see. And so that's what really matters. When he announced in September, right around Labor Day, that he was running, that to me said that they had to hit that $1 million mark, or why bother doing it? Why not wait 3 weeks? And he failed to do that. And so that's worth pointing out, that he came in second in the U.S. Senate race when it comes to fundraising. He was running against Mike Rogers in this reporting period, and he didn't beat Mike Rogers' expectation that people were expecting to see from Mike Rogers.
That's all for this week. Hopefully by the time we return, but I don't hold out much hope, the House of Representatives will actually demonstrate a semblance of being a credible legislative body.
I'm not going to hold my breath waiting for that to happen. If the Republic is still standing, and regardless of my COVID status, we'll return next week. Get your booster shot, and thank you for listening.
A Republic If You Can Keep It with Jeff Timmer and Mark Brewer is a production of Michigan Citizens for a Better Tomorrow.